From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Here's the battleground. Big media companies, Hollywood, recording studios, want the web all battened down against pirates. They want the internet audience, and they want it to pay. Big technology companies, and a lot of little ones too, say, fine, just don't strangle the web. It's freedom. It's ferment. Don't make it a police state. There is now legislation on the table and a big hullabaloo all around it. This hour on Point, the clash of titans over piracy, power, censorship, and freedom on the web. You can join the conversation. Can we have it all tidy, locked down, intellectual property rights, and web freedom? What's your bigger concern here, piracy or overreach by the pirate hunters? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear from both sides today on the Stop Online Piracy Act before the House and the Protect IP Act in the Senate, and we'll talk with an internet CEO who's taken his site dark today in protest. But first, for the big picture and who's lining up where, we go to David Gelis, U.S. media and marketing correspondent for the Financial Times. David, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So what are the sides here? We'll look at the legislation, but who's lining up where on this?
Well, for the first time, in very distinct terms, you have the media industry on one side and the technology industry on the other. Supporting these bills are industry groups like the Recording Industry Association of America, the Motion Picture Agency of America, and on the other side, you have technology behemoths like Google, Facebook, and a lot of other big tech companies from Silicon Valley.
What are the stakes for each side? Let's start with the content producers, the media companies. What are the stakes for them here?
The content producers say that they are losing literally billions of dollars a year from online piracy. What happened is, after the days of Napster, when it was easy enough because there was one site that you could shut down, what's happened in recent years is that online piracy has been diffused. It's all over the world, and some of the most egregious pirate sites are now hosted in foreign countries far beyond the reach of U.S. law. So they say because of this, it's just impossible for them to get a handle on it, and as a result, billions and billions of dollars worth of content is being stolen, essentially, each year.
What about the tech companies who have lined up big on the other side of this? Google and Wikipedia and Boing Boing and Reddit, we'll hear from its CEO and more. What about their interest here, their stake?
Well, the tech companies got very upset, very riled up in the recent weeks over a particular provision in the Stop Online Piracy Act, so-called DNS blocking. This would essentially make it so that when you tried to go to a site, even if you didn't find it through a search engine, if you just typed in its web address, an internet service provider would essentially block it. It would be as if the site didn't exist. This is the same method that China uses to enforce its so-called Great Firewall of China. What's remaining in the bills is perhaps less controversial, though the tech companies aren't really talking about that today. What's remaining in the bill are essentially three provisions, all three of which Google has telegraphed it might support. And those three are, when an offending site is identified, the Department of Justice would ask that advertising networks, payment processors, and search engines essentially stop working it, starving it of the traffic and money it needs to survive.
And that's it? That's what this legislation would do at this point?
Well, the legislation hasn't passed yet, so there are draft bills in both the House and Senate. But Lamar Smith, the sponsor of SOPA, the most controversial of the two bills.
This is the House version, yeah.
Exactly. Thank you. Last Friday said that he was going to remove the DNS blocking provision, which was the most controversial. Nonetheless, the theatrics have continued into this week.
You call it theatrics, but I mean, people are saying this could put a big damper. You can read it right off Google's website here. A big damper on innovation, on entrepreneurship, on web freedom. What's the connection between the kind of trying to punish or stop piracy and those fears, those threats?
Well, there's a fundamental difference between the media companies and the web companies here. And I think that's about how much, if any, really, regulation there should be on the web. Both sides, I think, have been resorting to hyperbole to make their cases. If you look at Rupert Murdoch, the CEO of News Corp, he has taken to Twitter in recent days, really slamming the opponents of these bills.
Including the White House. He said they're dancing on the puppet string of their Silicon Valley paymasters or something like that in his tweet.
Something to that effect, indeed. And so you can see that both sides are quite impassioned on this issue. And my fear is that the rhetoric has gotten so far out of control that it's going to be very hard to have a true dialogue between the sides. And I frankly think that's quite needed.
A lot of people were saying just last month this was rolling toward passage. Now, the White House has just come out over the last weekend and expressed some disapproval, said they couldn't support it. Was the White House clear on what they didn't like or what it would take to get a presidential signature on legislation like this?
It sure looked like these bills were rolling and really on the fast track towards some kind of consensus and passage. This is the rare bipartisan issue on Capitol Hill, which, of course, is quite welcome these days. But as you said, on Saturday morning, quite out of the blue, the White House chimed in. And it said, well, it wants solutions to combat online piracy in the U.S. and especially abroad. It will not support any form of essentially internet censorship, any provisions it feels might clamp down on free speech. And a lot of people feel like that's exactly what the DNS blocking was going to do.
David Gelis with the Financial Times, thanks for giving us the intro to this big kind of roiled scene right now. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Chris Dodd, former U.S. Senator from Connecticut, is now on the other side of the lobbying line. He's chairman of the Motion Picture Association of America. Here he is telling Bloomberg News earlier this month that the House bill here, Stop Online Privacy Act, would protect America's interests.
We're talking about blocking the ability to steal American ideas and American products and American jobs from foreign sites. We do it domestic sites, and we've closed down many. No one's broken the internet. No one suggested freedom of speech has been hampered.
No one's broken the internet, so he says. But on the other side of the line here, you've got a lot of people saying there's a threat in this. Wikipedia has gone dark today in protest over the potential for this kind of legislation. And not only them, Boing Boing has done it, Reddit has done it. Joining me now from New York is Alexis Ohanian, co-founder of the social news site Reddit. Tech sites Reddit and Boing Boing Wikipedia all have orchestrated this blackout on their websites today to protest the legislation. Alexis Ohanian, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
Why have you taken your site Reddit down today?
Well, because when Steve Huffman and I started Reddit back in 2005, it was from an apartment in Medford, Massachusetts. We raised less money than it would cost to buy a new Ford Focus, and the two of us started working our butts off to build a site that was eventually acquired by Condé Nast and, you know, now has over 35 million visitors a month. We were living the American dream, and that entire dream, that success, could not have happened if either of these laws were in place.
Does something about Reddit depend on the freedom of pirates to be pirates?
Not at all. In fact, I'm a copyright protector myself. I think like many tech entrepreneurs, we're very interested in combating piracy. The problem is this legislation has been written by lobbyists and not technologists. And you can see it in the vagueness of the language. Reddit could even be misconstrued as a search engine under these provisions. And the requirements that would be put on domestic websites to police themselves is virtually untenable for larger sites that have user-generated content pouring in all the time, and totally untenable for a brand new site, for an upstart, for the next Twitter, the one that's working out of a cafe right now and will go on to push the economy forward. It's frustrating for me because I would, trust me, like all of my peers in the tech industry, I would rather be running my company right now. I would rather be creating stuff that people love, hiring people, and adding value.
Why would legislation like this make life untenable for big tech companies, for small tech companies? Why? How?
Because the burden of trying to monitor content when it's coming in at real-time levels, when you've got people pouring in all kinds of information, is unsustainable without a fleet of people. We see the DMCA, which is current copyright infringement protection law in place right now. We see that abused time and time again. And all we're saying is we look at this problem, and it's an interesting point that the previous comments were made. If you look at the people who are lining up to support this, why is it that Congress can't seem to do anything that matters in the way of fixing unemployment or the deficit? You know, they're totally gridlocked. But when the entertainment industry spends $95 million last year to pay lobbyists, they get a bill written. Both Republicans and Democrats then line up to co-sponsor it. This is the bigger problem, and I think this is why we're seeing an awakening, not just from the tech world, but from the internet at large.
Is there room for a compromise here? Blog on your site has said in the last day, freedom, innovation, economic opportunity, all in jeopardy on the web if something like this goes through, and yet you hear the howls of pain from the media companies. Is there a workable compromise?
Absolutely, but it has to start by taking SOAP and PIPA off the table and starting from scratch with actual technologists at the table, not lobbyists.
And if you've got that, can you really put a plug in piracy, or is piracy just a part of the price we pay for the sort of internet freedom that lets the ferment roll on, Alexis?
It is in the nature of the technology. In the same way that, you know, the wonderful highway system we have in America that provides for so much commerce and, well, also a great way to take a vacation, it can also be used for illegal activities. That doesn't mean we blow up all of the highways. Instead, we need to come up with much more effective legislation that actually solves this problem. And, you know, at the end of the day, I am a firm believer that the private sector will actually end up innovating ways to combat piracy a lot better than the government ever would.
Alexis Ohanian, co-founder of the social news site Reddit, thanks for joining us from New York today. Good luck.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the internet, clash of titans over piracy, power, censorship, and freedom on the web, big media versus big tech, and lots of ordinary internet users in between. Wikipedia dark today. Legislation on Capitol Hill, future now uncertain. Here's a clip from an ad produced by Creative America. It's a trade group supporting the legislation to push back on piracy that has raised such controversy.
They traffic in phony medications, stolen movies, TV shows, and music. They're stealing American ideas and innovation.
The Pirate Menace, you can hear them going after there. But defenders of a different kind of internet freedom say, watch out, there's a lot more that can be caught in the vise here. Let's bring in a couple of sites here. Marvin Amori joins us right now from Washington, D.C. He's a fellow with the New America Foundation's Open Technology Initiative. He consults for companies opposing the legislation, including Google. He's a former head lawyer for the advocacy group, Free Press. Marvin, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And in the other corner, Sandra Astars joins us. She is executive director of the Copyright Alliance. That is an advocacy group representing a creative industry, Motion Picture Association of America, NBC Universal, News Corporation, that's Murdoch, Walt Disney, Time Warner. She's former vice president and associate general counsel at Time Warner, Inc. Sandra Astars, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So Wikipedia is down. A lot of people like Wikipedia. Other sites are down today. You're hearing the howls of protest from the tech side of this. And Wikipedia is not even a for-profit. How do you read that protest, Sandra? Does it say to you that there's something going on in overreach in this legislation?
Well, I think the real problem is that people aren't focused on the current version of the Stop Online Piracy Act. I think all the criticisms that you're hearing about the bill have largely been addressed through the manager's amendment that was offered by Chairman Smith before the holidays. And that a lot of the debate that you hear online is simply inaccurate with respect to what the bills currently do. They have very narrow definitions. They apply only to foreign sites that are, in the words of the bill, primarily designed or operated to infringe by distributing either counterfeit goods or complete copies of copyrighted works for commercial advantage. So these aren't the Wikipedias of the world. These are sites that are directed at the United States and that are designed and operated for the purpose of stealing copyrighted works and distributing counterfeit goods.
Marvin Amori, there has been some pullback, some change, some amendment offered here. Is this grandstanding by the tech industry at this point, or are there real reasons to be concerned about internet freedom?
Not at all, Tom. This is not grandstanding. The original bill had about 20 things that were wrong about it, and the bills now have about 19 that are wrong with it. And the original speaker, David, said that once you remove domain name blocking, everything else was something that Google and the tech companies could agree to. That's not true at all. The current bills, as they stand, have search engine censorship in there. So essentially what happens is a qualifying plaintiff, a copyright owner, goes to a court, gets an order against a domain name and then has search engines remove those domains. It also has in there immunity provisions, essentially vigilante provisions that immunize any company that decides to act on its own against pirates. And it includes anti-circumventions provisions that would make it illegal to use certain encryption technologies that we and our State Department promote around the world to fight censorship in China and Iran. And so what's going on isn't grandstanding or theatrics. It's democracy. If you go to Wikipedia, it sends you to your senator in order to call your senator to get them to stop the vote on January 24th, because congressmen usually hear from lobbyists, not from the public, and that's what the tech companies are trying to do.
Sandra, I'll come to you to look at the elements of this, but first, Marvin, what is it that's got tech companies most concerned here? I mean, let's look at, say, a search engine. What is the problem? Take us in a little more detailed way to what is offered in the legislation as it stands now, not as it was a month ago, but as it is now, the people are worried about. How's it work?
Sure. So there'd be two ways that it would affect search engines. First, the definition of the sites that are dedicated to infringement are new. It's a new definition. There are already existing rules around copyright on the internet. There's already cases that took down Napster and Grokster and Kazaa for being illegal. There's already Supreme Court doctrine. This introduces a new standard, an untested standard. It seems to be a different standard that doesn't coincide with what we have already. So the question is, would YouTube, under a standard like this, if it were a foreign site, be illegal? Would a search engine...
And it might be illegal, what? Because somewhere in YouTube there would be a link to a pirate site, Pirate Bay, or you name it?
Exactly. So user-generated sites are the ones that are most concerned about this. User-generated sites for sharing, because people will upload or videos, they'll upload pictures, they'll tweet. And if these companies, these user-generated platforms, have to monitor everything on their site, they themselves could be subject to the bill, because the bill defines website as a portion of a website.
But if they're exempt, how do you ever get a handle on piracy? You know, sites like Pirate Bay, they navigate all the time to new websites, new web addresses. They use those sites on YouTube and elsewhere, I'm imagining, to sort of stay under the radar. How do you get a grip on that if those sites don't have some responsibility?
So the current law puts responsibility on them. If anyone's gone to YouTube and noticed that a video has been taken down, that's the current law. There's something called the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, the DMCA. Mm-hmm. Every single site online, if you look in the upper right-hand corner, will say DMCA policy. Any copyright holder who sees a specific copyright infringement sends a notice to YouTube, to Twitter, to Zynga, to any of these sites, and then it can be taken down and there's a process. This bill takes down whole websites and requires search engines to censor those websites. It doesn't just take down specific content, specific videos.
Sandra, here's a listener in upstate New York. Tim says, why can't Hollywood media producers incorporate anti-piracy features on their products or develop new, more effective ones? Wouldn't that potentially create jobs instead of bogging down our already unproductive Congress? What about that, Sandra?
Thanks, Tom. Yes, the Hollywood community is working with the tech community to develop all sorts of distribution measures that incorporate anti-piracy measures, and those are effective to some degree. They can certainly always be hacked by users that are intent on doing so, but that is something that is already in place. Tom, I'd love to respond to a couple of the things that Marvin said about the bill.
Please.
So there are a number of things that Marvin said that are inaccurate with respect to what the manager's amendment does. First of all, he referred to a ability by private actors to bring an action against a search engine and to require a search engine to stop providing links to particular sites.
In the last summary that I read, that seemed central to the legislation. Is that gone?
There is no provision, there's never been a provision that gives a private right of action to an individual copyright owner. There is a provision that allows the Attorney General to seek a federal court order that a site is a site that's primarily designed or operated to infringe, and then to seek the cooperation of search engines to make those sites less accessible. But there's no private right of action for an individual copyright owner.
Hang on with that one for just a minute. I'll come back to you, Sandra. Marvin, on that one, no private right to action? I mean, it does go through the AG, so isn't that a kind of a break on vigilante action?
the way I read the bills, so the original SOPA bill allowed qualifying plaintiffs, intellectual property holders, mm-hmm. to simply send notices to take things down without going to a court. And the more recent legislation, the way I read it this morning, mm-hmm. And if I'm wrong, I'll stand corrected, mm-hmm. is that a qualifying plaintiff can bring an in personam action against the operator of a website or an in rem action against the domain of a website, and once it gets an order, it can take that the order will go and be served on search engines, advertising networks, and financial payments.
I mean, that sounds scary. Yeah, you've got Rupert Murdoch just saying, "You there, stop that, or face the consequences."
Sorry, I just want to correct one mm-hmm. thing. It's not permissible for an individual copyright owner to serve those orders on search engines, ISPs, or domain name operators.
But don't they initiate, and wouldn't the Attorney General have an obligation then to follow through under this legislation?
Well, the legislation establishes two different paths, one mm-hmm. for the Attorney General and one for private actors. And the point is the remedies that are available to private actors are far more limited, and they involve dealing only with entities that serve up advertising or power those sites by providing payment processing services.
But those are pretty big deals, providing advertising and payment processing. I mean, that's not some small little niche. Those are big.
Well, absolutely. And we're dealing with an enormous problem, which everybody who is debating this issue agrees is an enormous problem that can only be fixed by passing some sort of legislation. The Obama administration has called on all sides to do so. And I think even when I've heard Google testify against the legislation, they've always acknowledged that it's a big problem. And in fact, Google has directed the legislators to look to the follow the money approach, as they call it, which would be dealing specifically with ad networks and with payment processors to address the problem. The problem here is that we're dealing with rogue sites that are inaccessible to judicial processes in the United States. So you can't bring that site to the United States and deal with the site directly. You have to work with the partners that enable that site to continue operating.
Marvin, the argument here is that this is not aimed at American companies. This is aimed at foreign rogue sites, as Sandra puts it, who are putting this stuff up, and so everybody at home can be at ease.
Well, so that's not true, because the anti-circumvention provisions that would make encryption technologies like Tor illegal, that applies to domestic and international technologies. It's also not true because a lot of American sites have domains abroad, like Amazon.co.uk, Google.ca. Those are affected by it as well. But just to step back, there's a big picture point here, which mm-hmm. is the Attorney General hasn't been guiltless when it comes to taking down sites. We've already had experience with sites being taken down wrongly in the past few years. There's hip-hop sites that have been taken down. There have been hundreds of thousands of domain names taken down wrongly in a sting of child pornography sites. And those sites should be taken down, but innocent sites were taken down as well. So the check of the Attorney General hasn't been so effective when it comes to domain name blocking, and it's not quite clear to be effective when it comes to search engine censorship, which is something that happens in countries like Iran and China, not usually in the United States.
Don't bring it home here, and yet here you got the big publishers, big media companies saying, help us out somehow. Marvin Amori, Sandra Astar, standby. A lot of listeners calling in here. New Orleans, Louisiana. Adam is calling. Hi, Adam, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
My main concern with the SOPA and PIPA bills as written is that, by and large, they seem to put the burden of proof of proving or disproving a claim on the targeted party. And my concern with it is I run a small photography business, mm-hmm. you know, just on the side. I do almost all of my business through the Internet, through Craigslist, through my own website. And if, for instance, a competitor, you know, if a competitor saw, you know, a photo that looked even remotely similar to his or hers, decided, hey, maybe this guy is taking my business, files a claim against me, the first I hear of it is when my site gets taken down.
Right.
And when my business gets, you know, cut off at the knees. At least the way that I'm understanding the bill.
Sandra, what do you say to that? You hear Adam's concern. Just here's one content producer in New Orleans, and you hear his worry.
If the bills did what Adam is concerned about, I would be very concerned about them as well. But the bills simply don't do that. The bills aren't directed at any U.S.-based site in the first place. So presumably you're operating in the United States if you're in New Orleans. Secondly, they deal with sites that are, in the words of the legislation, primarily designed or operated to infringe. So we're not talking about a site where there may be dispute about one image on the site or one piece of content on the site. We're talking about sites that are in operation solely to deliver copyrighted works into the United States, you know, movies that are still in the theaters, a whole roster of ebooks that that you can download in one fell swoop, that sort of thing. So I think you can take comfort in the narrowness of the definitions there. With respect to the due process claims that that are made, the burden of proof is on either the Attorney General or on the private party seeking the injunction from the court against the foreign site. It's the same process that applies to every civil action in the United States. And it's run through federal district courts where there's the opportunity for the site operator, should they wish to make themselves available to contest in the United States, to come and defend just like in any other case.
Marvin, don't worry. We've got a narrowness of definitions that ought to put people at ease here, Sandra says. And you've got, you know, you've got a kind of legal structure overseeing this that should be some guarantee against its abuse.
I wish that were the case. But the way the language is drafted in the bills, it says U.S. directed site, and then that's essentially defined to mean any site that's accessible in the United States. It's very broad. And as it turns out, Americans have a right to read foreign sites. They have a right to read Voltaire. Mm-hmm. They have a right to read Charles Dickens. These are foreign authors. So the fact that it's only targeted to foreign sites doesn't change the fact that we have a First Amendment right to access non-infringing speech made by foreign authors. But let me just give an example of how it could affect, you know, an American site very simply. There's a provision that says that circumvention of the remedies in the bill will be subject to an injunction. The sites that circumvent the law will be enjoined from certain activity. And so let's say you and I are having a conversation on Twitter, mm-hmm. and you say, what, you know, I heard that the Pirate Bay's domain has been taken down, or I hear that the Pirate Bay, you know, its advertising has been taken down. And you say, what's the IP address of the Pirate Bay so I can get to the Pirate
yep.
Bay?
Mm-hmm.
And I say to you, here's the IP address. And I tweet it, and all my friends tweet it, and it gets tweeted everywhere. That becomes a circumvention technology, perhaps, and there could be a liability for Twitter. So any user-generated site out there, from Facebook to YouTube, if I make a video, how to get around SOPA because it's so bad, right? And that gets shared. The question is, does YouTube become a circumvention technology? And if I encourage people to use encryption technology like Tor, the same kind that the State Department funds for Chinese dissidents, right? Is that illegal to use that kind of encryption technology, which will get me to the Pirate Bay or MegaUpload.com or any other place to watch movies illegally?
Marvin Amore, hold the thought right there if you would. Sandra A. Stars, here's a song protesting SOPA and PIPA to the tune of American Pie, posted to a YouTube channel today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
I hear you saying, why a law's a thing you can buy? They got paid off, should be laid off, free election denied. Our web means more than lawyers, lobbies, and lies. So speak up before the internet dies. Speak up before the internet dies. Why a law's a thing you can buy? They got paid off, should be laid off, free election denied. Our web means more than lawyers, lobbies, and lies. So speak up before the internet dies.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the internet, clash of titans over piracy, power, censorship, freedom on the web, big media versus big tech, and lots of ordinary internet users in between. Wikipedia is dark today. Legislation on Capitol Hill looked like it was a sure thing. Now, future uncertain. Sandra A. Stars is with us. She's executive director of the Copyright Alliance. A lot of big media interest there pushing for this legislation. Former vice president, associate general counsel at Time Warner. Marvin Amore is with us from Washington today. Legal fellow at the New America Foundation's Open Technology Initiative. He consults with companies on the other side of this battle. Here's a little bit of Congressman Lamar Smith, Republican, Texas, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, lead sponsor of the Stop Online Piracy Act. He responded to the bill's detractors on a Texas radio talk show earlier this month.
We ask them to point to a single word in the bill that they think is going to hurt the internet, and they can't do it. This is a bill that goes after foreign websites. You get a court order, and these are the websites that are stealing America's innovators' inventions and selling them, and that costs us jobs, it costs us money, it hurts our inventors, it hurts our own American companies here.
So we're listening to that. At the same time, ProPublica reports that Congressman Smith got $90,000 from the entertainment industry for his 2010 reelection campaign, $47,000 from the tech industry. There's all kinds of money on all sides of this and big, strong attitudes out there. Let's get a call from Nashville, Tennessee. That's content creation country. Bob, you're on the air.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to maybe try to put a little personal note. I'm a professional songwriter.
Okay.
I was a musician for many years, but I went behind the scenes and bet it all on Article 1, Section 8, and now it's either licensed legal use is the only way I make any money.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen my profession gutted. There's probably a third of the songwriters left in Nashville than there were in 2000. I've seen my own income drop precipitously, and if I Google any of my hits, my most recent one, I just did it this morning, there are hundreds of thousands of sites, most foreign. They're the top ones on the Google search, and they are right there with links, either selling my song for a dime from the Ukraine. There's advertising on there, Princess Cruises, Lysol, Verizon. Everybody's making money with every click of the mouse except for me, and I hear an awful lot of hand-wringing about potential harm to some hypothetical future individual and a total disregard for the trashing of those of us who make our living with copyrights.
Bob, you make it vivid. Let us pick it up right there. Marvin, there's a real-life creator, real-life songwriter. He sees his living going out the window. What do you say to that?
He's right. Piracy is a problem. But the bills don't address the problem very well, and they have huge collateral impacts. And it's all the result of a flawed process, really. Rather than actually bringing stakeholders to the table and figuring out a law that would address piracy and continue internet freedom, this was a rushed process by Lamar Smith and others who tried to steamroll over opposition and called anyone who opposed the bill obstructionists. Whereas if we had an open dialogue, which we could have if we like press reset, start over, we could figure out a way to address piracy. And as it turns out, piracy is something that I think people can work together on and everyone agrees is a problem. It's just that these bills go far too far because they're very one-sided.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a call from Savannah, Georgia. Gilles, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting to me that I certainly think piracy is a problem and something needs to be done about it, but that these movie companies or whoever, media companies, seem to think that there's billions of more dollars to be made from the American people or from anywhere around the world. Even if they were able to stop it, do they think that these pirates are suddenly going to open up their wallets and buy this stuff legally? I think what will happen is they will simply stop consuming the media altogether, which may be a good thing. Maybe they'll go outside. But I don't see them recouping the billions of dollars they're claiming to have lost. I don't see that as a realistic possibility.
But Bob, doesn't that sort of diss callers like our earlier Bob? He's a songwriter. Songwriters have, you know, what makes them special? They write songs that are so beguiling that for years people paid for them. Why wouldn't they pay for them now?
Well, I don't think people are not paying for them now. I think there are some people out there that would not have bought the album to begin with that are now obtaining the song for free. And the people that would have paid for the album in the past are still paying for the album now. The people that used to go to the movie theater are still going to the movie theater. The people that bought DVDs are still buying DVDs. Maybe a slight impact, but certainly not the majority of people. I think the people that were going to steal it and do it for free are, you know, are a different crowd of person.
Yeah, Gilles, I appreciate your call. Sandra, what about it? Is it possible that the media companies are trying to, you know, reimpose an old model on the way people interact with content that just won't fly anymore? Seems to be the basic suggestion there, that you're trying to bring something back from the past that doesn't fit our age.
I think that's not the case at all. If you look at what the media companies are doing, and let me actually step back and say, even though the Copyright Alliance represents a lot of big media companies, we also represent thousands upon thousands of individual artists and creators like songwriters, photographers, individual authors and so forth. And it's actually these folks that are suffering the most, and these indie voices that are quickest to disappear from the scene when financing dries up for new projects. So it has a very big economic impact in a variety of ways. With respect to, you know, new media efforts by the creative community, there are a variety of things that the creative community is engaged in. And certainly the creative community relies heavily on sites like, you know, Facebook, both to distribute and sell within Facebook some of their content, to market it and so forth. So there's absolutely no interest in shutting down any sites that operate in this legal space.
But it makes it possible. This legislation would make that possible.
It would not. Again, I would urge you, and unfortunately you don't have it on your background reading, but I would urge you to go and look at the manager's amendment for the Stop Online Piracy Act. You can go to the House Judiciary Committee website, and there's a link to it. If you go to the issues drop-down menu and hit rogue sites, you can get to the text of the amendments. And
so, you know, what's the club that's over these American firms then, if not that kind of intervention? What's your leverage to get them to stop representing or, you know, including these foreign websites where you say piracy is going on?
Sorry, I'm not following your question.
How would they stop Google or Twitter or anybody else from or YouTube from permitting or offering access to these websites? What's your leverage?
Right. The bills would establish a process by which a case could be brought by the Attorney General or by an individual copyright owner that's been harmed by infringement on rogue sites.
With what threat to the American web company?
We're not talking about American web companies.
Well, yes, you are.
What you're asking is, what if Google and Facebook and Twitter and all of the startups that are also engaged in this issue, like Engine Advocacy and other groups, what if they ignored the orders? That's what the question is. And you're suggesting there's no effect on American companies.
Federal district courts have the right to enforce orders that they issue. So, yes, if Google thumbed its nose at an order that was issued to it to stop directing people to infringing sites or to stop selling advertising against infringing sites,
then what?
There could be a federal remedy from the federal court.
Like
a contempt
what?
Of court,
like shutting
a contempt
it down.
Of court remedy.
Okay,
no,
so
contempt
it seems
of court is the remedy that applies in civil cases.
And could that not lead to a shutdown or a major financial punishment, fine here?
The court would select the remedy.
So it seems disingenuous to say that there's no leverage over American companies. You've just named it right there. Maurice in Chelsea, Massachusetts.
Right,
you're on the air, Maurice.
We're looking at you're mixing apples and oranges here.
I don't think so.
I'm not saying that we're not engaging American companies in solving the problem. I'm saying the sites that we are directing the bill's provisions at are sites abroad that are foreign sites that are engaged and operated primarily to distribute infringing goods and counterfeit goods.
Yeah,
it's
come on.
But
it goes through
entirely
to say
that you have to work
sites.
With American partners. That's the only way you get access.
Exactly. That's all I'm trying to point out. Let me get a caller here. Maurice in Chelsea, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Maurice.
Yeah, my concern is right in line with what you're talking about. I have an issue with the way the bill, at least as of yesterday, defined foreign Internet sites.
Mm-hmm.
Internet companies are dynamic and global. They can have servers in one country, employees in multiple countries. To me, it's an issue with the lawmakers and their extreme age makes it difficult for them to understand how the Internet really works, in my opinion. If you've ever tried to explain to your grandparents how the Internet works, I don't know if you've ever gone through that exercise, but it can be difficult. I can take a response off the air, but the foreign site definition is currently very vague, and I think it could be abused.
Marvin, what about it? Do you see room for abuse there, or is there a bright line?
No, he's right. It's very vague. It's even overbroad. And he points to two things that are very interesting here. One is the implicit xenophobia of we're only going after these that commercial, that dark foreign people who are stealing American goods. And the second thing is that Congress doesn't seem to understand the internet very well. I worked on an issue called net neutrality for many years, and it was very difficult to get congressmen to understand the internet. And during the hearing on the House side for SOPA, there were lots of congressmen supporting SOPA who kept saying, "I don't understand the internet, but I'm not an internet nerd, but," and pontificating on things they'd heard from lobbyists.
But isn't it the case, Marvin, that a lot of the pirates do, in fact, retreat overseas because then they're further away from the reach of American law as it currently stands?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely true, and there's a problem. The question is, if you look at the fact of piracy, the same way you might look at the fact as a businessman of employee theft or some other theft, you've got to ask yourself, how do I deal with this fact? Do I engage in litigation? Do I engage in lobbying and an untargeted bill that I try to roll over the internet community? Or do I address a service problem? A lot of people, two callers ago, mentioned that a lot of people don't use pirated sites. They use iTunes, right? Because it's also a service problem. Lots of people can get content more easily from pirated sites than from legitimate sites. And legitimate sites could respond with technologies that make it easier, provide better service for people to actually get the content they want. And I understand that if you're a copyright holder, you might not want to have to respond to the fact there's piracy by changing your business model, but it actually beats the other options of trying to lobby censorship or trying to litigate against every one of these sites.
Peter in Nashville. Peter, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'm a published author myself, and I'd like to point out that the issue here is not copyright. The issue is the horse-drawn buggy manufacturers trying to sue the automobile manufacturers to get them off the road to protect the buggy market. The media companies are trying to protect an old-fashioned, outdated business model, as others have pointed out. This bill is not about copyright. It's about companies trying to protect their revenue stream. And the sooner that we wake up and recognize that, the sooner we might get to the truth of what the argument's all about.
But what about your fellow Nashville caller, Peter, who's a songwriter, who said, you know, he's got a limited number of ways, I suppose, to make money off those songs and needs people to pay for them, and he sees them, to his eye, stolen all over the world. What about that?
Sure, but look at the new business models opening up. There's an author who's just become a million seller on Amazon through selling his books at 99 cents on Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
And by pricing them at 99 cents, he's got such an incredible market opening up with people who would never have bought his stuff that he's just made $300,000 in royalties in less than a year, I think it was. He's changed his marketing approach and his pricing to take advantage of a new technology. And as a result, he's doing very nicely, thank you.
So don't try to lock us down in old ways that don't work in this era. We've got it. Norwich, Connecticut. Nick, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Nick.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that these incredibly rich Hollywood moguls and incredibly rich Rupert Murdochs of this world run to daddy for some regulations when they are too cheap to create a technological fix that will, in fact, solve the problem. Why do we have to have censorship when all they have to do is to make it impossible to copy their stuff without a key that can be provided for a cost?
Marvin, is that really out there? It would be lovely, but is there really a technological answer to this, or is there always a workaround if you're a determined pirate?
So I'm not a technologist, but what I've noticed is that consumers don't really like digital rights management. Like if you look at iTunes, for many years there were lots of digital rights management and it kept loosening up. And so there's a balance for Hollywood between what users want and how they can lock down the files. But the interesting thing is, you know, if you make content available, even if it's not encrypted and locked down, people will choose legal alternatives. They've chosen iTunes. They've chosen Netflix.
Sandra, you can hear in the feedback, I'm sure you've heard it all over the place, it's here today as we speak, people just not trusting a lot of big media producers to keep freedom and innovation in mind as they look out for their own interests here. That sort of lack of faith that they'll try and keep the innovative spirit of the internet alive as they try to lock down the edges. That's got to be a problem when you get into the legislative arena and you get a big spotlight on it.
Well, I think it is unfortunate that that's the perception. The people that I speak to on a daily basis are individual artists and creators across the country, and there are at least 11 million people all across the United States.
Plus News Corporation, Walt Disney Corp, Time Warner, Universal. These are all your clients, Viacom.
They are indeed members of the organization, but as I said, we also have a strong grassroots network of people who are individual artists and creators, who are indie filmmakers, who are authors, who are photographers, so on and so forth, songwriters. These are the people that are impacted the most by piracy.
A month ago, you must have thought this was a done deal. Is it out the window now? Where do you think we're going to end up here, Sandra?
I don't think it's out the window now, and I didn't think it was a done deal a month ago. I think it's been a long process considering the bills. There have been various comments made by Marvin today that, you know, it's a rush process trying to roll the tech companies. And that's simply incorrect. There have been versions of these bills pending before the Senate for 2 years now, and in the House. There have been, you know, hearings and markups and amendments offered to bills to try and address all the concerns that people have.
Got a different kind of attention right now. Marvin, what's the bottom line thing that you see at stake here? We've got 20 seconds.
The bottom line at stake is whether or not the public will be able to convince Congress to keep the Internet open and free and to address this problem without sacrificing the Internet. And so hopefully Americans call their congressmen today and their senators.
Well, there are the two sides, and you can see just how fierce the interests are when they get in this arena. Marvin Amori with the New America Foundation's Open Technology Initiative joining us today from Washington. Thank you, Marvin.
Thank you, Tom.
Sandra A. Stars, Executive Director of the Copyright Alliance Advocacy Group, representing lots of individual artists, plus the Motion Picture Association of America, NBC Universal News Corp, and right on down. Sandra, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.